Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Jolly. Thank you for all of your messages about the focus group yesterday. If you haven't listened back to it yet, it's well worth a listen. We got our regular monthly Times Radio focus group, a panel in Manchester, Derby and Plymouth, talking about Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer and the budget, COP26, so that's well worth listening back to. Coming up today, we've got PMQs unpacked. We pause the action from the House of Commons and explain what's going on between Boris Johnson and Angela Rayner this week, because Keir Starmer is still self-isolating. Tim Shipman is back too, and he'll be trying to explain what is going on. In a moment, we'll have the columnist panel. But first, if you want to come on the radio and do my hugely popular quiz, Can You Get to Number 10? It's very straightforward. 10 general knowledge questions. The more questions you get right, the better the job you get in our cabinet. If you want to get in touch, email me matt.chorley@times.radio with your name and, crucially, your phone number. And you can be on the radio very soon, which will be exciting. Right, up next, it's our columnist panel. It's Wednesday, so it must be Crampon. It's Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson.
Let's do what we're actually here for. Let's talk COP and climate change and all that, but particularly meat. You've written about meat in your column today, Alice.
I have, because everyone is obsessed by farting and cows and ruminating animals and what they do. And actually, they do add to the climate problem. And in a way, they are the problem, but they are also the solution. So, you know, you have cows and they belch and they fart and a lot of methane comes out of them. But methane does actually dissipate after 10 years. So it's not the worst sort of air. It's just that we look at them and think we should be eating less meat. What I'm saying is that the farmers are really part of the solution here, because they could help with the methane. They could help trap it in the soil. And that if we look after our animals in a better way, they could be part of the climate change solution.
Yeah, explain how this works in practice. How do you trap a cow's fart?
So cows, they've done all sorts of weird things. You can actually give them garlic pellets, which they do quite a lot now, and they give them lemongrass pellets, and that stops them farting.
Oh, so you stop it before it starts.
Yeah. And they've given them face masks if they really want them. So that's COVID too. I mean, it's great. So,
face masks?
Yep. So some farms now do face masks because it's the belching.
Because the belching. Belching's as bad as the farting, apparently, yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's quite a science now. And actually, the thing is, what I feel is I'm totally happy. Half my family are vegans, you know, the other half never stop eating meat. But I think that the point is that you should have the choice. You shouldn't feel really guilty if you're eating meat, but you should if it's not grass-fed. And actually, something like poultry is much worse. It's better to have a steak, usually, than it is to have a chicken breast.
Is it?
Yeah, because the chickens are fed on 2 billion, you know, I think it is something extraordinary, like 2 billion tonnes of corn have to come over for them and soya. And so that really adds, and also there, you know, most of them, 95% of what we eat has been in these huge factory sheds rather than free range, whereas most of our beef is actually free range. And a lot of, you know, if you think about it, you never see sheep cooped up, do you? They are in the field.
And I suppose that's the thing, isn't it, Robert, if you're buying British beef from a farm, you know, they've wandered the fields of whatever, that's better than if you buy something that's been imported, you know, where the Amazon rainforest has been cleared to make space for them.
Yeah, it's much better. And, I mean, we should all eat less meat. It should be like it used to be, which is a kind of treat, high days and holidays. And and I think Alice is right. We have a real blind spot about chickens. We worry about animal welfare in all sorts of weird and wonderful ways. But the real one staring us in the face is the way that chickens are reared and treated. And we just want cheap chickens. So we don't seem to mind too much about that. I was struck by the avocado thing, and your Alice Thompson's recipe for the new hipster breakfast.
Good, isn't it?
Well, it's good, but broad bean pate, fermented gooseberries, and mashed artichokes. I think you might be causing a human flatulence problem there. So seriously,
I wasn't so keen on broad beans for breakfast.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have avocados anymore, though.
Can't you?
No, because they take up too much water.
320
Well, I never
gallons.
Wanted them anyway. I never understood. They don't taste of anything. You have to put a load of other stuff on it to make it tasty.
Well, mushy peas may be the answer.
They taste of soap.
Yeah. Right. Mushy peas for breakfast.
Yeah.
I could probably get on board with that.
You are going to replace the cow problem with a human problem, aren't you?
Mushy peas on toast.
They're quite good.
Get the hipsters eating that. I'm not sure about that. How do you think that actually the sort of nudging people towards eating a bit less meat is more realistic?
Yes, I think that is the answer in the end, is that you want them to eat it. As Robert says, you know, having a roast chicken is occasionally, you know, a good thing to have, but it really, you don't want it very often. And people do just get chicken breasts because they're like, you know, £1, £2.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's extraordinary.
And a bit
when
less
you
of the sort
it.
Of ground up minced beef that you don't know where it's come from.
And you don't actually need that. That's when you can add other stuff. Yeah. And actually, I think if we go to that, it would be much better because we do, you know, actually, it's quite good for iron, it's quite good healthily. My daughter will totally disagree with this because she's vegan, but, you know, occasionally...
I think that's where the nudge is coming from. I mean, I bet the vegans in your family are the younger ones rather than...
Yeah, exactly. So they're too younger.
I mean, the nudge is already happening from the younger generation. My kids are kind of... They're actually eating meat at the moment, but they've been several years they've been pescatarians or vegetarians, or they go kind of in and out of it. And that generation... I mean, I think it's something like a third of teenage girls now are vegetarian.
But you need to eat local, so they do eat a lot of avocados, don't they? You need to save them. You've got to eat something.
They do round our way, yeah.
Do you know what? We've had so many messages about this. How does a face mask stop belching? It just leaks around the mask. Woke at his best, apparently. Somebody else says, you do realise that people also belt and fart. Fart and belch. Belch and fart. God.
That's disgusting.
The main cause is vegetables, not meat. The meat that could cause gas build-up is pork. And then Phil says, have I mistakenly tuned into GB News? I've never heard so much balls and farting. So let's move on then. Let's move on for a moment. Let's talk about Owen Paterson. But I basically made my views quite clear at the beginning of the show. I think it's completely ridiculous that he... gets a punishment he doesn't like, and because he likes him, they think they can vote it down. But do either of you want to try and convince me otherwise?
No, I don't. I'm a bit baffled by this story. He's getting £100,000 a year from this company and one like it. He then lobbies for them. I mean, breaks the rules. He says it was a matter of public interest. If it was a matter of public interest, why don't you just tell the BBC, tell the Times, you know, if there was some... antibiotic. Or don't take money from them. And then he gets punished, a 6-week suspension. I can't really quite see the problem. I can't convince you otherwise. I could convince you to maybe make it a longer suspension.
What do you think, Alice? And the way that this sort of all plays into, we've already had situations where cabinet ministers have been found to have broken the ministerial code, but for whatever reason, Boris Johnson decides to keep them. I've made the point at the beginning of the show that a couple of weeks ago, everyone was talking about David Amos and how we all need to be nicer and to politicians and respect for starting with respect for politicians surely has to be them abiding by their own rules.
Yeah, so I think that's the biggest problem is that, you know, after the expenses scandal, there was a period when MPs did behave better and they have a very, very difficult life. We know we've had, you know, tragedies. They have appalling times on Twitter, but that doesn't prevent them from them behaving well. And Owen Paterson is an extremely nice man. I remember interviewing him when he was brought up with these badgers that he kept as, you know, tame pets. You feel incredibly sorry for him, for his wife, Rose, having died. And I think that, you know, there's so much about that, but that's really nothing to do with whether or not he's broken the rules. And I think if he'd had the 30-day suspension, everyone would have felt incredibly sorry for him. And I think his constituency would have backed him to the hilt. And then I think he would have come back. And I think it would have been much easier. There wouldn't have been a fuss. We wouldn't have had to hear about it so much. Now it's become a major issue. And they just do look sleazy again.
And it's one of those things, and we've talked about this loads of times on the show before, where all these things don't matter until they suddenly all do.
It's also confusing because why would obviously he's taking the money in order to confer a benefit on the on that company, and then he tries to confer a benefit on them, and he gets penalised for it. I'm not sure what you can do. What would you have to do as a lobbyist that would be okay? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, and there is, you know, it goes back to this whole question of MPs and their second jobs. It is different.
Yeah,
you know, writing a newspaper article or working as a GP is one thing, but acting as a consultant for two food companies, having been the Secretary of State for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, £100,000 a year. So more than his MP salary.
And obviously they're going to want to see some return on that.
Yeah.
And it's always about the fact they don't think they're paid enough as MPs. That is the issue. So because they don't think they're paid enough, they took too much in expenses. Because they don't think they're paid enough, they want an extra lobbying job. And in the end, you have to work out how much they should be paid.
Yeah,
and then I'd prefer them to stick with that. And actually, they're not paid that badly.
Well, no, I mean, it's gone up a lot. Mm. I mean, it was like under £60,000 and now it's over 80, going on for £90,000 a year. But just the fact, I mean, you know, maybe this food company was wondering why he was spending so much time as an MP when he should have been concentrating on his job as his main job of consulting for them.
I was amazed by that figure. I thought they were much smaller amounts than that. I mean, that's like a proper salary. Serious money salary.
And what do you think it means for the... Because I suspect if PMQ's Angela Rayner might bring it up because it's sort of right in her... you know, exactly where she likes to be attacking the Tories for. Will it make any difference? Because we'll hear all this stuff about how it's all priced in and it doesn't matter. And
I think you're right. There's a tipping point. So it never made a difference at the beginning with expenses. So we did know, and I can remember, we knew that MPs were putting things on expenses. And we knew that they realised that it was slightly dodgy. But you need a tipping point. There'll come a time when, you know, they don't care, the voters, for a long time. And then suddenly they do care. And this will all come back to haunt them, like with... You know, the manure stories, the duck house stories.
You need the duck house.
It'll just be one story and then we'll go back through all the rest of them.
Yeah, and then it'll all sort of becomes, you'll get that tipping point. Let's talk about, but on the subject of money, but this is money going in the right direction. It's a great story, this. Diana Rigg, who died last year, left most of her just over £3 million estate to her daughter, but she also left £5,000 to a beautician. And you've written about it today. Yesterday.
Well, I wrote about it yesterday. And it's published today.
It's published today, because that's how time works.
Yeah.
who would you leave your... if you've got...
I nominated Mustafa, who runs my local corner shop and has done for 20-odd years. And I wouldn't say he was a friend, but he's been kind of more than an acquaintance. And... we've had some great chats. He just works incredibly hard. He's got that immigrant work ethic. Works 7 till 7 in the morning. Well, he's open 7 in the morning till 11 at night. So I guess he's up a lot earlier than that. And I don't think he makes a great deal of money, and he could do with a windfall. And unlike the beautician in the Diana Rigg story, Mustafa would keep it. She made a very nice gesture and gave it to the grandson. But I think Mustafa would keep it, and he'd be very welcome to it.
What about you, Alice?
Our farmer on Exmoor, actually, who is amazing and gets us out of ditches, or me. And,
do you want to explain how you've ended up in the
ditch? I don't think I need to know this. Or I can't change a tyre. He must think I'm the most hopeless person in the world, but he's always been amazing, Earl, and he keeps our children looked after their ponies when they wanted them and showed me what to do with chickens and... He's just amazing. He's not actually. He's one of those people that doesn't really obsess about money. So I'm not sure what he'd do. It would probably be a prize bull, maybe, or maybe he'd go and get face masks.
I was going to say
face masks for his cows. Do you eat your chickens or just the eggs?
No, we eat the eggs. I can't eat the chickens. I'd eat the cockerel because it makes so much noise, but I'm not allowed because the children are obsessed by it.
Is cockerel a bit stringy?
Yeah, I think they all are probably after a bit.
Probably a bit tough.
And they've all got names.
Yeah.
It's a bit cruel.
It's a little bit. Yeah, my farming families, they tend not to eat their own.
But then it's probably worse.
If they do a sort of swap, you know, they swap with another farmer, won't do the same thing, so that you can, you know that it's been properly reared or whatever. So you have my pig, and
they can tell their kids that he's gone on a little holiday or something.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, these sausages are delicious, aren't they, children? Yeah. Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson there, and of course you can read them both in the Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next is PMQ's Unpacked.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalised plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast now. It's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Tim Shipman.
Yes, it's that time of the week where we pause the action live from the House of Commons to explain what is going on. Tim Shipman from the Sunday Times joins me. How are you, Tim?
I'm very well indeed, Matt.
Are you excited by the prospect of Angela Rayner versus Boris Johnson?
It would be wrong at the top of a programme like this to say no to that question. It's potentially thrilling, isn't it?
The interesting thing about the sort of the Keir Starmer being testing positive Wednesday morning last week is we had the spectacle of Ed Miliband actually doing a pretty good job at PMQs, then Rachel Reeves...
He's got a bit of form, hasn't he?
Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves doing a pretty good job responding to the budget. Were Angela Rayner to do a pretty good job today? Tongues might wag. Would that make Keir Starmer squirm a little bit?
Yeah, or maybe think, what a great thing it is that Labour have such a good and efficient top team. You know, any efficient Labour spin doctor will be able to spin this into a shadow cabinet of giants ready to... to step in and take over the governance of the nation. At least that's what they should say.
It's lovely that you've been drinking so early in the day to come up with that sort of analysis. What do we expect Angela Rayner to go on? Because the Owen Paterson thing is extraordinary, but it's a bit complicated in quite Westminster Village.
It's a bit village, isn't it? You could go on the COP catastrophe and what's going on at the summit. It's probably not as bad as all that. You could go on COVID, which is beginning to be a problem again. People resigning from Sage and saying, you know, the government's not taking it seriously. If she wanted to be left field and show her sort of working class credentials, she might start to talk about immigration in a way that Keir Starmer is reluctant to do. I doubt she'll do that, but that would be an interesting turn of events. But, you know, Paterson and the legitimate change to complicated and inefficient rules / massive sinister power grab would seem to be the obvious thing to do if you can, to use an old phrase, sex it up a bit and make it about wicked Tories and MPs judging their own homework. And
it's
all that
sort of
thing.
Her wheelhouse, isn't it? The sort of Tory sleaze, crony, corruption.
It feels like natural terrain for Ange to swing her handbag.
Yeah, and possibly make Boris Johnson squirm a bit. Well, we're just keeping an eye on the House of Commons. A couple of backbench questions before Angela Rayner appears at the dispatch box. Lots of MPs have been told to wear masks after a bit of reluctance in previous weeks. There's some new rules being put in place. They're now cancelling all meetings and all banquets have been cancelled. New rules.
Good Lord, the end of days.
The end of days. No banquets in the House of Commons. New rules, they've got to be wearing masks. It looks as if they are wearing them on both the Labour and the Conservative side. So I think we can now go live to the House of Commons. This is Labour's Deputy Leader, Angela Rayner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And can I share the opening words from the Prime Minister regarding our armed forces and the tremendous work they do, and also send my best wishes to all those recovering in Salisbury, and give our sincere thanks to the emergency services that responded on that day. And I'd also like to wish all those celebrating tomorrow a happy and peaceful Diwali. Yeah. Now, let me start with something on which there should be agreement across all sides of the House. The independent standards process found that a member broke the rules on paid lobbying. Yeah. Surely the Prime Minister accepts that this is and should be a serious offence. Yet we have seen reports that he will respond by scrapping the independent process and overturning its verdict. In no other profession in our country could someone be found guilty by an independent process and just have their mates vote them back into the job. Surely, surely the Prime Minister and his government are not going to do that today.
No, Mr. Speaker, of course we're not going to do that, because paid lobbying, Mr. Speaker, paid advocacy in this House is wrong. And let me make absolutely no bones about that. And members who are found guilty of that should apologise and pay the necessary penalties, Mr. Speaker. But that is not the issue in this case or this vote that is before us today. It is not. The issue in this case, which involved a serious family tragedy, Mr. Speaker, is whether a member of this House had a fair opportunity to make representations in this case, or whether as a matter of natural justice, our procedures in this House allow for proper appeal, Mr. Speaker. And that I think is something that should be of interest to members across this House, Mr. Speaker, and should be approached properly in a spirit of moderation and compassion, Mr. Speaker.
Angela Ray.
Okay, well, let's pause it there. She has decided to go on the Owen Paterson case. We should point out, which we didn't discuss before, Owen Paterson's wife took her own life last year. All of the lobbying actually applies to 2018, 2017, 2016. So there's a sizable gap in between. But like you were saying, one person's careful adjustment of the rules to ensure fair justice is someone else's dreadful marking of your own homework.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where a lot of people around the House understand that this system is far from perfect, that the rulings of the Commissioner are somewhat inconsistent. She seems to take umbrage against certain things and while nodding through others. There is clearly a personal element here which gives this extra sort of oomph from the Tory side. Owen Paterson's claim is that the investigation is what partly prompted his wife to take her own life. So it's quite heavily charged. But it's quite hard to escape the conclusion that rigging a committee so that the Conservatives can set the rules as they wish, and then potentially giving MPs more say over the outcome of these cases, that's pretty politically bad. And Boris Johnson would not be attempting it unless he had a majority of 80.
And I suppose the point is that the crime, if you like, isn't carrying out an investigation following his wife's sad death. It was lobbying on behalf of two companies who were paying him a lot of money. It's conflating the two things is slightly missing the point.
Yeah, I think the Tory argument is that the investigation could have been conducted better. Paterson could have had more opportunity to make his case. There were some witnesses that were not interviewed, and there have been examples of this in the past. If you go back to some of the situation around some of those vote leave cases before, there were claims that witnesses were not asked to give evidence who should have been. So it's a funny old situation, this. It obviously something the Tories feel strongly about, which is why they're prepared to put some political capital at risk to change it. But I think your average punter in the street is going to wonder what they're up to, really.
Well, let's go back and have question number two from Angela Rayner.
Mr. Speaker.
No, Mr. Speaker, of course we're not going to do that, because
on that day.
Oh, hang on, let's rewind the machine.
Speaker,
here we go, Angela Rayner.
Let me put this to him simply. If it was a police officer, a teacher, a doctor, We would expect the independent process to be followed and not changed after the verdict. Yeah. It's one rule for them and one rule for the rest of us. Mr. Speaker, when a Conservative member was found guilty of sexual harassment but let off on a loophole, they said the rules couldn't be changed after the event. Yep. So they can't change the rules to stop sexual harassment, but they can change the rules to allow cash for access.
Shameful.
So why is the Prime Minister making it up as he goes along?
Just to jump in there, the other case that she's talking about there is Robert Roberts, who was an MP, who was a Conservative MP, readmitted to the Conservative Party despite having been found to have sexually harassed a member of staff. And at that point, there was a row, wasn't there? And they said, well, we can't change the rules now because this is done and dusted.
Yeah, that's right. I think he has not been readmitted to the Tory whip, but has been readmitted to the membership of the party. But again, there's a lot of Tory MPs who look at that and think, why couldn't we just kick this bloke out? It would have been a lot cleaner and simpler.
But also, he's a relatively new MP. As Owen Paterson's been around for a long time. He's got lots of friends in the House of Commons who are perhaps, therefore, not the most impartial of judges on this. Let's hear Boris Johnson's reply.
Mr. Speaker, all the professions that she mentions have a right of appeal, Mr. Speaker. And that is what the House needs to consider. And may I respectfully say to her that I believe that she needs to focus, instead of playing politics on this issue, which is what they are doing, I think that she needs to consider the procedures of this House in a spirit of fairness, Mr. Speaker. And we on this side of the House, instead of playing politics, we are getting on with delivering on the people's priorities, Mr. Speaker. 40 more hospitals, 20,000 more police officers, wages up, growth up, and jobs up across this country. Those are our priorities.
Order. Order. Mr. Perkins, I don't want to say any more of that either. Right. Thanks for that.
Right. Lindsay Hoyle slightly losing. I love the idea of, can we stop playing politics? Wages are up, growth's up.
Yes.
Here's some election
let's
slogans.
Let's not play politics, but
politicians
playing
politics
what you'll be reading
are just the worst.
On the side of a bus near you at the next general election. I thought that would be both the question and the answer were pretty good, you know, sort of rollout of what both parties think are their biggest selling points. Rayner hit quite effectively that, you know, one rule for them and one rule for the rest of us, which is a common theme now when Labour are effectively attacking this government and accusing the Prime Minister himself as making it up as he goes along, which is something I think that does cut through as well. And then Boris Johnson replied, well, what really matters here? You know, it's your schools, your hospitals, your job. And we're doing all right on that front. Thank you very much. And that's the next general election in a nutshell, isn't it?
I suppose the thing that part of the reason why the Labour Party keep niggling away at this one rule for one for the other is that the Dominic Cummings affair was probably the worst point for the government in terms of their sort of political view, you know, the view that voters had of them. So constantly try to reignite that, you know, get that old bandwagon road is a priority.
I think that's right. But I think conversely, a lot of Tory MPs think, well, yes, what Boris Johnson said is right. The big things that matter are your job and the economy and the health service. Why are we wasting political capital trying to redo the sleaze rules?
Just say, terribly sorry, Owen, but you've got to suck it up.
Yeah. You know, I've spoken to people this morning who say, you know, their whips have been calling them, telling them they've got to vote the way, and those MPs pointing out that this is a matter for the House of Commons, and people saying they're going to abstain and ignore what the whips are telling them because they don't want to get involved in all this.
All right, let's go back. Question number three is Angela Rayner. Stands here for Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, this isn't about playing politics in this place. This is about playing by the rules. And as we can see, it's one rule for everybody else and one rule for the Tory Conservatives. When they break the rules, Mr. Speaker, they just remake the rules.
Yeah.
And I know that Donald Trump is the Prime Minister's hero, but I say to the Prime Minister, in all seriousness, he should learn the lessons.
Liz Truss shaking her head there,
that if
Boris
you keep
Johnson,
cheating
not
the public, it catches up with you in the end.
Yeah.
Because while they're wallowing in sleaze, the rest of the country faces higher bills, rising costs and damaging tax rises.
Yep.
So I ask the Prime Minister, can you tell us What is the projected tax increase per household over the next 5 years?
Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, what I can tell her is that the recent budget did was take cash from those who can afford to pay the most, and it had huge and had very substantial tax cuts for the hardest working and poorest families in this country. We cut £1,000, Mr. Speaker, with the universal credit taper relief cut for hard working families in this country. 2 million families had a £1,000 tax cut, and we're lifting the living wage across the whole country, Mr. Speaker. And what we are also doing, Mr. Speaker, is ensuring that this country gets on with a high wage, high skill, jobs-led recovery. And never let it be forgotten that if we listened to them, we would have none of those things, Mr. Speaker, because we'd still be in lockdown.
Right, we've slightly moved on now, onto possibly firmer ground for Boris Johnson. I mean, the Labour Party think they've got, you know, a good attack line against the Conservative because of the economy and tax and so on, but it does give Boris Johnson a chance to just do his greatest hits, Tim Shipman.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Rayner had a good line, you know, you break the rules and you remake the rules. That it's perhaps a bit too clever by half to be a hit later. But she's doing all right. As you say, Boris Johnson will be sort of relieved that that bit's over, and you know he can now just hit his election slogans all the time for the rest of this this thing, I would have thought. It's interesting, though. He is persisting with this line that changing benefits is a tax cut, which had Rishi Sunak feeling the heat the other day at the Select Committee, where people were claiming this has nothing to do with taxes. It's a change to benefits. But the Tories are, you know, rolling out a taper rate on benefits as a tax cut, which, you know,
in a sense, the government is going to take less of your income away.
Correct.
But it's a bit more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Right, let's go back. Question number four. This is Angela.
I think
Rayner.
He missed out the number, so let me help him out. The Resolution Foundation found that by 2026, taxes will be £3,000 more per household since he took office. My constituents and his constituents are feeling the pinch, and they're worried about Christmas as well, Mr. Speaker. Their bills are going up every week, and the budget did nothing to help them. So can the Prime Minister tell them how much was the tax cut that he gave to the banks instead?
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, as she knows very well, it is the banks and the bankers who are paying far more proportionally as a result of our tax measures to cover the cost of the NHS. And actually, it's a very moot point, because the £36 billion came from 50% of it comes from the 14% who are the richest in this country, Mr. Speaker, overwhelmingly from the banks and financial services industry who can pay the most. And the astonishing thing, Mr. Speaker, is when it came to voting for that £36 billion increase in 48 new hospitals, in 50,000 more nurses, in looking after our public services, they voted against it, Mr. Speaker.
Angela Rayner.
Oh, it feels a bit like after a good start, we're losing head of steam.
One of those PMQs again, isn't it now? I mean, there's interesting things here. The Resolution Foundation that Labour is quoting is run, of course, by Torsten Bell, who used to be a Treasury advisor to the Labour Party. So there's a nice bit of linkage there. Boris Johnson, continuing what he did as London Mayor, defending banks and bankers in a way that no other Tory politician ever has, which I always find interesting. But, you know, you've then got a philosophical difference. You know, Labour think they throw around banks and bankers and everybody recoils in horror. And Boris Johnson says, well, you know, these people raise lots of money, lots of tax, and it's them who are giving us the money to spend on this stuff. And that's, you know, the essence of Labour versus Tory politics.
There's also a sort of the complete inversion of politics. You've got the Labour Party complaining about taxes going up to fund public services.
Yeah.
And the Tories attacking Labour for not supporting increases in public spending.
Yeah, and this is what Boris Johnson has managed to do. For right or wrong, whether it will work or not, we don't know in the long run. But he's changed the dynamic. He's changed the political discourse, and he's changed the political map in this country. And Labour need to find ways of having a pop at him that they're not used to. Rayner's making a pretty decent fist of it, I would say. But, you know, one feels like the greased pig is beginning to slip loose from the from its moorings now and is beginning to run happily around the farmyard.
I'm not quite sure, but having had that conversation earlier on about what's happening to pigs, maybe we shouldn't get too bogged down in that. Right, let's go question number five. This is Angela Rayner.
Mr. Speaker, according to the Prime Minister's own budget documents, it was £4 billion in tax cuts to the bankers and £3,000 of tax rises per household. Good news for the donors who gave his party £500,000. His bank got a bonus of nearly £8 million, but not so good news for the rest of us, Mr. Speaker. Now, Mr. Speaker, this month, as the Prime Minister said, we remember and celebrate all those who serve our great country and all those who have lost their lives, leaving behind loved ones, and those who have sustained life-changing injuries and live every day with the consequences of their sacrifice. Yet hidden in the small print of the budget was a £1 billion cut to day-to-day defence spending.
Shocking.
So, Mr. Speaker, will our servicemen and women face pay cuts, or will there be fewer of them with less support?
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I think it's quite incredible that we're now hearing this from the Labour Party when they would have pulled us out of NATO and I think the right old lady actually wanted to abolish the army. The woman sitting next to her, Mr. Speaker. What you've got in this government is a spending on defence which is the highest since the Cold War, the biggest uplift since the Cold War, and an increase that has restored confidence in this country, around the world, in our ability to defend not just our own shores, but to defend our friends and partners as well. And that is what this government is doing.
Angela. Right, it's interesting. There's a more interesting politics going on here. Angela Rayner now positioning herself and the Labour Party as the friends of the military.
Yeah, no, I got it wrong at the top when I said she might try immigration, but she's gone with defence instead, and this is an interesting moment.
Yeah. It all plays
doing something thing. Slightly counterintuitive, showing the working class families who've abandoned Labour that they are about, you know, nation and defence as well as about, you know, helping the poor. And I think that's, you know, interesting. Boris Johnson can rightly claim that he's chucked loads of money at sort of headline schemes for the MOD, but their day-to-day budget is a shambles, and there's a lot of money needs being clawed back there. There's been a huge amount of waste and overspending, and not surprised that the Treasury is grabbing a little bit of that back under the table. So, you know, a good bit of research from Labour there, and interesting that Rayner has mixed things up. You know, it's the third different theme in her six questions, and she's keeping him on his toes.
And we should point out the allegation of wanting to scrap the army and the woman sitting next to you. That was Lisa Nandy, the Shadow Foreign Secretary, sitting next to Angela Rayner on the Labour's front bench. I think she spoke at the launch of a pamphlet which talked about possibly scrapping the army, replacing it with something else. But she insisted that she didn't applaud the report, and it's complete and utter rubbish, she said. She's always stood
up. It was Jeremy Corbyn who famously mused that couldn't we do away with all this in the same way that some of these peace-loving South American nations don't bother with armed forces. But yes.
But it's interesting, you know, and Angela Rayner, one of the great survivors of the front bench under Jeremy Corbyn, now putting a flag in the ground,
waving it,
if you will,
yes.
to extend your military metaphors. Right, I think we've reached question number six now. Let's see if Angela, she's covered a lot of ground. Owen Paterson, tax and spending, benefits, and now the defence budget. Where will she go with question number six?
Mr. Speaker, he knows that I asked him about the annual defence budget, which his own budget documents show will drop by £1.3 billion.
Yep.
And I hear the Prime Minister's fine words. I'm from a military family myself, but I won't take party political lectures from him because too often the government's actions don't match their words.
Yeah.
And Mr. Speaker, I think of my constituent who fought in Afghanistan and yet was threatened with sanctions because he was unable to physically travel miles to the nearest DWP office.
Shameful.
The Prime Minister's tax cut for short-haul flights last week cost £30 million. Yeah. That is 50 50% more than the government spends on supporting veterans' mental health each year. The charity Combat Stress has lost £6 million in funding this year, even as their calls to their helpline have doubled. So will the Prime Minister match our proposal to reinvest the £35 million saved from cancelled MOD contracts to support our veterans that surely deserve it?
Yeah. Mr Speaker, it's because we've been able to run a strong economy and take our economy out of lockdown that we've been able to invest massively in the NHS, we've been able to lift spending on defence to record levels and to keep supporting our fantastic public services. That is what this government is able to do, Mr Speaker. And I must say I enjoy my conversations with her in spite of the insults that she, the party political points that she directs it towards us, Mr Speaker. And I may say without, I don't want to cause any further dissension in the benches opposite, but I think you'll agree she has about a gigawatt more energy, Mr Speaker, than the Right Honourable Gentleman, her friend, from Hayden and St Pancras. I'm just putting it out there. But it's the same old Labour. No plan, no ideas. We're getting on, Mr Speaker. We're delivering on the people's priorities. We're taking this country forward. Growth up, jobs up, wages up, productivity up. All they do, Mr Speaker, is play politics while we deliver.
You got the slight sense there, but I wasn't quite sure how to finish.
Well, I mean, he finished question six as I think he finished question, was it two or three?
And possibly three.
Yes. You know, well, when you've got your lines, you should probably stick to them. But a little jibe there,
A tiny little jibe there.
Yes,
saying
that, a gigawatt more energy.
Andrew Redd has got a gigawatt more energy than Kiss On. Which is true. I mean, let's not overblow it. The PMQ isn't the be-all and end-all and all of that. However, I mean, he, William Hague was the only thing that he was particularly successful at as Tory leader. But, you know, he says that had he been less successful than that, it would have been even worse. And keeping the troops buoyed up and showing a bit of muscle and a bit of, you know, having something about you is what you need. And actually, we've seen in the last week, Angela Rayner, Ed Miliband, Rachel Reeves, socking it to the government a bit more than Keir Starmer normally manages.
Yeah, I think that's right. I was quite impressed, actually. I thought she was... she kept him... You know, he wasn't able to get into his... You thought halfway through he was about to get into his comfort zone. And the fact that he deployed the same answer twice sort of makes you think that, you know, he might well have had to deploy it five times if it had been a more pedestrian one. Interesting. And, you know, I'm from a military family myself, says Angela Rayner. For those of you that didn't know, you know, everyone knows she was a granny at 31 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But you know, that gives a little bit more to the Rayner biography too.
And in terms of the things that land, we were talking yesterday we were doing the focus group, and Boris Johnson's sort of colourful turns of phrase do land. People, you know, they get reflected back all the time. We were struggling to think of anything that Keir Starmer might, you know, and actually, you know, it would take a while, but some of that sort of, what was it, wallowing in sleaze, too often the government's actions don't match their words. It's one rule for one for all of that is just trying to get to a thing that are the sort of messages that come up in focus groups and that sort of stuff.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we've been hearing the sort of one rule, as you say, since the Cummings affair, you know, one rule for them. One rule for the rest of us, and that is a bruise they need to keep punching. Thus far, the government is giving them fresh opportunities.
That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. And we bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcast from?
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.